Welcome back to It's an Inside Job podcast. I'm your host, Jason Lim. Now, this podcast is dedicated to helping you to help yourself and others to become more mentally and emotionally resilient so you can be better at bouncing back from life's inevitable setbacks. Now, on It's an Inside Job, we decode the science and stories of resilience into practical advice, skills, and strategies that you can use to impact your life and those around you. Now, with that said, let's slip into the stream. Welcome back, folks. I hope you had a good weekend, and thank you for joining me for a new episode. This week, I have a fellow Canadian right from my home city of Toronto. Well, I have the pleasure and the privilege of welcoming Tanya Dodaro to the show today. She is a multi-business owner, public relations expert, and a serial entrepreneur. Tanya's forward-thinking approach to entrepreneurship has led to a launch of a platform that connects startups with micro and angel investors in the FEM space. As the co-founder and CEO of a boutique public relations communications firm for the last 18 years, Tanya has helped countless emerging businesses and international executives grow their brands and boost their revenues. Her expertise spans the globe, working across five continents with a specialty in lifestyle category, where she's collaborated with such brands as Baskin-Robbins, Starbucks, and FitFlop. Tanya is also a trained journalist, having produced and hosted several television shows, including Health and Beauty TV and The Ultimate Makeover, which aired nationally in Canada. Her expertise in journalism has given her the opportunity to interview some of the world's most notable people, including Jean Chrétien and Donald Trump. Tanya's passion for giving back is evident through her work as a mentor for the next generation of entrepreneurs through Futurepreneur Canada and her involvement in several charitable efforts, notably the Daily Bread Food Bank and Breakfast Club of Canada. She also recently launched the Shepreneur Project, a social enterprise focused on empowering and inspiring entrepreneurship through education, mentorship, and funding. Well, folks, I had a brilliant time recording this conversation with Tanya. The conversation left me inspired. I mean, I pulled a lot of skills, practical skills that I can use in my own day-to-day. And so, dear listener, I hope you get as much out of this conversation as I did. So without further ado, let's slip into the stream and meet Tanya Dodaro.
My name is Tanya Dodaro. I have, I guess, an interesting background. I call myself a serial entrepreneur. I think I've been an entrepreneur since as long as I can remember. I also am a trained journalist. I've worked in communications for most of my career, and perhaps the biggest part, I'm a mom of two daughters.
That's great. And you're based in Toronto, correct?
In Toronto, yes.
Yeah. Well, as you know, as we've had a pre-meeting before the podcast, and this podcast is about sharing stories and skills and experiences of resilience. And as an entrepreneur of multiple businesses and a varied career that you've had, I'm sure you've come across your own share of adversity. I was wondering, maybe we could start off, like, what made you go into your original career?
So I grew up with two parents who were entrepreneurs. They were always never pushing entrepreneurship on my brother and I, but as a child, you observe everything, right, in your day-to-day life. And I would see how they would structure their life. And I guess somewhere along the lines, it just, I assimilated that behavior. So a couple of things that really stick out for me, like I remember my father who has now passed, but I remember my father would wake up in the morning, get ready for school, my brother and I, and his daily routine would be to read the newspaper in front of us having breakfast. Directly, he was sharing news with us, you know, the news of the day and things like that, things in politics. He'd be teaching us things. But indirectly, we were learning that he was designing his own life. He wanted to be home with us at that time. He didn't have to function at a specific time, specific place. And that really stuck and still sticks today, years and years later. And so I think my path just you know, through this indirect coaching from my parents, I saw how they lived and it just felt very comfortable. It was sort of the environment that I bathed in as a child. And, you know, as I moved into adulthood, I realized, you know, I looked to take on a career of journalism, and I did, and it was wonderful, but there was always this burning desire to, create something, a business of my own. And that's kind of what led me towards my entrepreneurship path.
Now, maybe we could just rewind back to your career in television and such. I mean, how was that when you first got into it? And what was that like? And what were some of the challenges that you experienced? Because forgive my ignorance, but I could see that industry as being very, very competitive.
It is. I've heard that from many people. Going into it, I also knew it was difficult, but it was such a desire of mine. Another little story: when I was in grade six, I was given the opportunity to be a valedictorian, and I thought it'd be really nice to get the class to dress up in the career that they wanted to be one day. And, you know, I had friends who wanted to be veterinarians and teachers and doctors and lawyers. And for some reason, none of those resonated with me. And I really struggled because I was panicked. I'm the valedictorian. I have to have some career. And then one day my parents were watching the evening news, and it was like a light bulb moment. And I said to them, "What is the name of the person, their career, who's speaking the news?" And they said, "A journalist." So foreshadow, you know, years later, it was something that I've always wanted to do, was passionate about the idea of sharing news to a larger audience, to be able to produce something that people will want to absorb and listen to, was always something I was very passionate about. So I graduated from university and took a specialist course in journalism, and I was super hungry. I wanted just to intern as much as I can. I realized that your network and your connections was going to be everything in this industry. So we had an internship that was set for the final year before you graduate. I met with the director, I want to say day one or week one, and I said, "Is there a reason why I can't start interning now?" And he said, "No." And so I started interning every single possible place that I could find. And I think that was really important in determining my success in journalism, is really just sort of ignoring the typical path, the norm, and forging my own path to reach my destination, which was to become a broadcast journalist. So that was super important. I also remember meeting with my professor saying, "These are my goals." Mm-hmm. I was very clear on where I was headed. And he also, he turned around and said, "Well, I wish you all the luck. You know, I'm sure you'll succeed, but you might want to have a plan B, because it is one in a million, you know, for broadcast journalism." And I walked away from that conversation defeated, but not for very long, because my vision was so strong that I knew exactly where I was going. And so I said, "Well, then, I'm going to be that one in a million."
Yeah. So your professor says this, and obviously he or she said this, you know, probably just caring about you and to think about, to come up with a plan B just in case, you know, there's a safety net. And obviously when you heard that, you felt defeated. May I ask, what is the reason you felt defeated? Because you seem to be a person with a lot of tenacity and, as you called it, hunger, and you kind of climbed through the ranks to get a job, to find whatever internships. But what was the reason that felt so defeating to you when he said that?
That's a good question. I think it was just this was someone I looked up to. Mm-hmm. This was a mentor. This was a professor. This was someone who was in the industry and had worked in the industry. And the fact that his confidence in me wavered slightly, I guess, trickled down to perhaps my own confidence wavering in terms of the ability for me to reach my goal.
there's a lot of young people out there trying to figure out what they want to do. You obviously had a pretty crystal clear picture as to your direction, and that added to your fortitude and your tenacity and such. But let me ask you, because this is about resilience, you know, resilience, when we look at the core, Tanya, it's kind of starting with ourselves, sort of the inside. How did you get past that sense of defeat? Was it just a sense of time led it just to process those emotions? Or was there something you said or something you specifically did to find yourself climbing out of that, I don't know, hole?
To me, it's always been mindset and restructuring the way you look at a situation. Mindset to me is the most important thing in life, in for happiness, for success, and all the good things that come with that. And so being able to define and understand what you need to let go of in order for you to move forward.
So it's mindset, and these are sort of values or principles that you hold to heart throughout your sort of career journey. I always like getting into the nuts and bolts, so it becomes very, very skill-based. So you said it's about mindset and restructuring the way you looked at a situation or the situation. How did you restructure? I mean, was it some sort of reframe? Is it something you specifically told yourself? Was it a more constructive question that allowed you to focus your attention on things that you had agency or had a sense of control over?
Yes, I always tend to feel like I have control. Whether or not that's true, I don't.
Yeah.
But I may not have control of the circumstances, but I surely always have control over the way I react to a situation. So yes, I mean, I have friends who sometimes will hear hurtful things, whether it be from their partner or from a friend or their child. And they just let it, they sit with it and let it simmer, and it just goes to bad places. And I like to think of my mindset where, you know, I'm in control of what I feel. I'm not in control of what people say, but I'm in control of how I feel and how I react to that. And so when my professor said that, I couldn't control what he said and how he felt, but I could control what I was going to do with that. And that to me was something that led me.
And I see a lot of parallels in with the clients I work with and what you've just said, because it's such a salient point what you're saying. You know, someone can say something, it can trigger, you can't stop those emotions, right, Tanya? They will just rise in you. It's just natural, because emotions are just chemical messengers telling us, pay attention, there's something going on. But what I hear you saying, Tanya, is that, okay, I've got the emotion that comes up, but I can choose at that crossroad what to do with it. I can spiral down, go down the rabbit hole, or I can do something constructive with this. And you said, I can control my reaction to things. And I think just that script, that one or two sentences, can build the resilience, can build the sense of self-efficacy and self-compassion and self-awareness. And as you said, the self-confidence to push through that. So, okay, he said it was well-meant. I felt bad about it, but you know what? I'll just chalk that up as experience, and I'm going to move on, because I can figure out which way I want to go. Just because he said something does not, it's not a prediction of my future. Is that kind of what I understand you've kind of articulated?
Absolutely. I wasn't prepared for him to define my road and my path in life. That was something that I wanted to be in control of. So you will have naysayers, you know, that's just part of life. And whether it's at home or at work with your friends, when you're out for drinks, whenever, you will have those people and frequently. And again, it's not up to them to define your path. You're in charge of your path. And it starts with mindset.
So if we jump back on this road that we were talking, you went into broadcast journalism. Can you describe a little of your experiences through that ride before you became an entrepreneur? And what you've learned about yourself along that road?
Yeah, absolutely. It was one of the most exhilarating times in my life, being a journalist. The adrenaline, okay, we're on in 3, 2, 1. you know, there's nothing better and more exciting. But it was a real journey. Like, it is, you know, my professor wasn't lying, you know, when he said it's a difficult path. But I also felt, and, you know, maybe it was the fact that I was really young and really naive. I don't know. And I had a ton of motivation in me. I mean, I stopped at nothing. I took every opportunity that I had. I remember one internship with, it was a national network, and it was working at the business desk. They had offered it to me without me knowing the details. And then when they had told me the details, they said, it's a 3 a.m. shift. Your shift will start at 3 a.m. So it's a morning shift. Do you want it? And I said, well, now I know why you gave it to me. I'm an intern. But I thought about it hard. Well, not so hard. And I said, you know what? I'm doing it. I need to take every opportunity. And, you know, there was so many evenings, nights, it was actually morning for me, that I regretted. There were so many nights that, sorry, let's remove that. I didn't regret it. Mm. I questioned it. This was over the winter in Canada. And it was a really snowy winter. I would have to be up at 1 a.m. shoveling several feet of snow off my car and off my driveway, and then take over an hour to get to the network just to start my 3 a.m. shift. And, you know, each one of those nights, I would just question, what am I doing? Everyone else is sleeping. But
a world of glamour.
It wasn't so glamorous. Absolutely not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quite the opposite, actually. Mm. But I had so much clarity in terms of where I was headed and where I wanted to go, that I didn't want to let these hurdles stand in my way. Mm. And that was one of the best internships I did, because it actually led to a position. Mm. So I had overcome those hurdles, and I guess not really overcome them, to push through them. Mm. And I was able to see the light on the other side.
And would you say sort of broadcast journalism for yourself, because of your hunger, your you know, you've had clear goals since, as you said, when you were at single digit age as to what you want, was it a relatively smooth ride, or would you say there were a lot of bumps along the way that you had to learn?
You know, when I look back now, I realize there was definitely, you know, barriers and hurdles. But if you asked me at the time, I would have probably said no. It was fairly easy. It was just about pivoting at the right moment, adapting at the right moment, and keeping a positive mindset throughout it all. Looking back, yeah, there was definitely things that, you know, would have changed that. But at the time, it seemed fairly smooth.
So one of the key tenets of resilience is, as you said, is adapting and evolving to an ongoing situation. Could you share some tips with us? I mean, what is adapting for you? How did you adapt, and in what ways did it show up in broadcast journalism?
You know, I often think about what are the things, the elements that are really important to me when raising my daughters, for example. And I question it all the time. And I think, you know, how do I focus on making them successful human beings? And one of the biggest things that I like to teach or talk to them about is the ability to be adaptable. There's so many twists and turns in this beautiful life. You know, being adaptable is crucial at every one of those turns and twists. And so the idea of accepting what is and learning how to move past it in a positive way.
In a sense, it's being comfortable in the discomfort, to get used of the discomfort. You know, one of the things I sometimes talk to clients about is, you know, when we're in stress situations, it's understanding that physiologically, Tanya, we can be stressed, the fight, flight, and that all kicks in with the adrenaline, the cortisol and such. But if we can stay centered in our minds, And some of the easiest ways to do this sometimes is to simply jump into a cold shower, because physiologically you can't stop that fight flight mode. But if you can somehow find the ability to adapt to that cold water environment and find peace, there's that almost this duality that goes. So psychologically, you're at peace of mind. As you said, you're adapting. I think that's so well said. You're accepting the situation, even though physiologically you're reacting. But over time, you know, this is something, maybe I'm a little sick in the head, but this is something I do a lot, cold showers, but it really helps me adapt to stresses in my life. And it sounds like broadcast journalism, getting up 1 a.m, shoveling your driveway, driving an hour when everyone else is asleep. In a sense, this is stressing your system because you got to get there on time regardless of the weather.
Yeah. You know, Jason, I remember something my grandmother said to me one day. I think I must have been complaining. I was at university. It was a stressful time. I had exams and things were happening. And I was complaining to her. And she said to me, life resembles train tracks. You will always have the good and you'll always have the bad. They will run in parallel. And you need to run in between them and move forward in between both of them. So there's that idea of adaptability. You need to adapt to that uncomfort and pleasure and strike this almost perfect balance if possible. And sometimes it's not balanced, right? Sometimes it's a little more to the right and sometimes a little more to the left. But it's the art of finding the balance between both of those.
Yeah, and obviously this is something you've honed through experience and years, you know, of knowledge and such to understand, you know, your limits, to understand how you adapt based on all those experiences. For someone, a listener out there, a young man or young woman coming up in the game, and they face some sort of adversity, some sort of challenge that shows up on their doorstep unexpected, Tanya. And a lot of us will start talking sort of with self-criticism. We start ripping at ourselves. We turn off that compassion. What suggestions or what advice would you give to that person? It doesn't have to be a young person. It could be an older person. But what advice would you give them to turn off the self-criticism and to have more self-acceptance and self-compassion? How do we make that shift? Or how do you make that shift?
Practice taking a lot of cold showers. Yeah. But, you know, I'm actually not kidding when I say that. I will sometimes find myself, I don't know, getting into a really cold lake or a cold ocean. And my first instinct is to say, I need to get the heck out of here. I try to push myself sometimes, even physically, to say, stay in here, feel the discomfort. And at some point, the discomfort passes fairly quickly. And so similar to that physical sensation, the mental sensation, you know, put yourself in a situation and practice it. It's like lifting weights. The more you lift them, the easier and lighter they will become. So practice and put yourself in uncomfortable situations frequently, and eventually it'll get easier and easier as you grow your muscles.
Yeah, it never actually becomes easy, but well said, it becomes easier.
Tolerable?
Yeah. No, but it comes easier, but it never, I find it's never easy to jump in a cold shower at 7 a.m, right? But somehow I find the tenacity to do it, right? But okay, so you're going through broadcast journalism. Did you receive sometimes harsh criticism or harsh feedback from viewership or from colleagues or anything? And if so, how did you deal with that?
You know what? It's tricky. This was the time before social media. So it was really just from the people around me. I can imagine what it would be like now with social media. But, you know, the one, I guess, comment that I remember was, you're too young. I was sort of neck and neck with some others who were perhaps a little more experienced than I was. And I mean, I was coming at it with very little experience. Yes, my mindset was right. I was hungry, but I really didn't have the connections, the experience. So that comment was difficult to hear. And I, you know, obviously it made me question, you know, am I too young? Is this the right place for me? it felt right until that person said that.
Of course, those are the sort of questions that naturally come up. But did you feel that you became bulletproof after a while, that you grew a sort of a thicker skin to those comments because you kind of fell back to your own self-confidence, your own self-experience, and you actually know what you are able and capable of doing?
I totally did. I totally said, you know, I was committed to the process. I understood there will be negative comments. I was entering an extremely competitive field. Everybody was applying for this one position. I mean, I knew there was going to be comments, just like there is in everything in life. But I chose to ignore them and just move along my path. I tend to not like to dwell on what my competitors are doing. I really try to focus on my own path. It's interesting. I've had a communications company for 18 years, and I saw a pattern arise. We had some small business. So we really focused on small and medium-sized businesses. We had some small businesses, and sorry, we had businesses that we were focused on representing. And I saw a pattern that would come up. They would all kind of start off in the same position, and some would see this intense growth in such a short period of time, and others would be struggling to pay our invoices years later. Of course, there's so many different variables. Who their team is and what their product is and whatever. But I noticed something. I noticed that the ones who were succeeding and seeing success upon success tended to really be focused on their own path. So when we would meet with them to do our monthly briefing on and take a look at the results, they would just focus on how can we do better? What did we, you know, what did we see this month? And how can we take that as a learning and move forward? The other group that was struggling to grow would tend to focus on, well, what's my competitor doing? What are their results? Let me take a look at some of the things they're doing. Can we look at copying some things they're doing? It was just very interesting to see the idea of focusing on your own path and how to succeed versus looking at what your competitors are doing in comparison to you. It's a very poisonous mindset. And I saw it, you know, leading my communications firm. And, you know, I try to talk to my daughters about it every day because I've got, they're two sisters and I see it even with them, you know, the competition. And I really try to focus on encouraging them to focus on their own path because that mindset can be detrimental.
That resonates with me because I've got two daughters myself. They're twins. And it's the same thing. I mean, they're completely different personalities, but they click together. But at the end of the day, they have to follow their own path, just as you said, Tanya. Because coming back to what you said, you know, those entrepreneurs who did well, they were focused on their own path. They were disciplined to focus their attention where it needed to be focused or where they wanted to focus. And when you're constantly, as I think this comes back down to, in a sense, maybe it's a little bit of a stretch, it's like doom scrolling. You know, people are constantly doom scrolling on their social media or reading, you know, all the negative news. And people don't realize how that affects our mindset. And as you said, it's about mindset. It's the ability to adapt and evolve to ongoing situations. And if you're polluting the sort of your headspace, your cognitive space with this unnecessary noise, It will eventually affect you. It becomes an emotional burden. And that kind of, it's almost like walking in molasses in a sense. You're moving. But what I hear is you're saying is that an entrepreneur such as yourself focuses on his or her own path where they need to go. And that means they have they're much more nimble. They're much able to adapt. And you said, what was the word? Pivot, you said. You're able to pivot when adversity hits you, right? It's not good. You don't like it. Who does? But you're more motivated to get through the storm than you're motivated for the storm in a sense. And so what I also hear is what you're saying, and please correct me if I'm wrong or if I've missed the nuance, is that those entrepreneurs that you know who are successful, such as yourself, focus more on the effort, their effort. They might look at the outcome, but they also, as you said, there's so many variables that play that can shift that outcome. It's to kind of kill your darlings. It's not to fix yourself on one type of outcome because it may be a certain permutation because, as you said, you can't control all the variables, but what you can control is the effort. Like the professor said to you at the trailhead of this conversation, you maybe want to plan B, But at the end of the day, you said to yourself, okay, you know what? That's his point. I know he's well meant, but at the end of the day, I can control how I want to react or proactively take on this. Is that what I'm understanding, this entrepreneurial mindset?
Yes, 100%.
Tanya talked about her professor, you know, someone who she looked up to, someone who had a lot of experience in journalism. And when he advised her to have a plan B and that it's very difficult to get into the business, Tanya felt her professor's confidence in her wavered, and that trickled down to affect her own confidence. And as she said, she felt defeated, but she didn't stay there too long. And as she said so succinctly, she may not have control over circumstances, but what she had control over was her reactions to those circumstances. She understood the necessity of letting go of the negative things, because as she said also, it can sit with you and it can simmer and it can lead you mentally into bad places. And at the heart of Tanya's resilience was the ability to pivot at the right moment, to adapt, and to hold a constructive and positive mindset. And so in the second part, we discuss and explore Tanya's pivot from broadcast journalism into the world of entrepreneurship. So now let's slip back into the stream into part two. So here you are at broadcasting, you are at the top of the game, but at some point, one day you wake up and think, you know what, I have this entrepreneurial fire that I want to project in certain direction. At what point did you make that jump from broadcast journalism into entrepreneurial businesswoman?
I wish the story was that easy. No, it was actually with a lot of heartache. So the peak of my journalism career really was, I ended up landing an amazing position. I was hosting my own show and producing my own show. It was a dream come true after all that hard work. I was told by a lot of my mentors, if I really wanted to make it in the industry, I'd need to focus on the US market and moving to the US market. I was totally open to that. And I thought I could do this. I decided to test the waters. I took on a contract position with a really, really popular talk show in the US in Manhattan. And I went there for, a short time period just to see how like the lifestyle and just to make sure it was for me, because I would be leaving my entire life here, my family, who I was very close to, friends and my life. And, I loved it. That summer I cut my demo tape. I had my cover letters, my resumes. I had everything set up. I remember having it all set up on this big kitchen table that I had. That same summer, my father was diagnosed with a brain tumor and was given a year to live. And I was extremely close to my father. He was my best friend. He also was my biggest cheerleader when it came to journalism. He would be the wind beneath my wings every time I hit, you know, a struggle or whatever. And he would be my biggest fan. He would be the one calling up the family saying, Tanya's going to be on TV at this time. Watch her, you know? And he would just get so excited about it. It was almost me. If it was almost like, had I not done so well, I would have let him down in a way, because he was such a cheerleader. So he was given a year to live. I realized that I'm going to change that. I wanted to be with him for that year. It was the only thing that was important to me at that time. So that really changed things for me. I was engaged and I had to rush my wedding so that he could be there. And it was the most difficult thing, but at the same time, the most beautiful thing that he was able to be there and we were able to have him there for our wedding. Coming out of that, you know, he had passed with all those that he loved around him and supporting him throughout his medical journey. But coming out of that, I realized there was this destination unreached with my journalism career. And I questioned, where do I go from here? A year is a long time in the industry. You lose a lot. And I just, believe it or not, I took myself out to lunch And at that lunch was very pivotal for me, because it was when I decided that life is too precious and I really wanted to focus on designing my own life. And that's when I decided to move to entrepreneurship, that very moment.
Wow, that's quite the tale. I mean, obviously it took you time to come through your father, you know, losing your father and such. As you said, you were so close to him and he was your biggest cheerleader, biggest supporter. So you came through that. So did that also become sort of a little bit of a jet fuel for your spring to take that chance to leap out into the entrepreneurial uncertainty?
It did. As I was grieving him, I was celebrating his life at the same time in my mind. And I wanted to focus on what made him unique as a person, what made him charming, what made him successful. And what I could extract is that he was able to, I mean, he faced a ton of adversity, you know, escaping from a communist country, rebuilding a new life here with no family and no friends. And he did really well for himself. And I really tried to look at what it was that made him who he was and created the life that he had. And it came down to understanding how precious life was. He saw, you know, how precious life was. And he was able to create his own life where he had time to spend with his children. He also had time to become a success in business. He also had time to visit with his parents and have breakfast with them every single Sunday morning. And so I wanted to take that and emulate that in my own life. And I think that's really what set off my entrepreneurial journey.
I mean, exactly as you said, you know, when you're passionate about something, your own idea, to launch that idea, you know, when you look at something that you do what you like, you do what you're good at, and you do something that the world needs. And if you can find this triad, this place where all three sort of coalesce, and you go out there and you do that, but it also allows you, as you said, to have time for your kids, time for those around you. And I think that's an important strike to balance, both financially and time. And if we can strike that balance, and a lot of the times we can do that as entrepreneurs, you know, what everything you're saying is it's so salient and it resonates with me, because I'm of a similar mindset. I'm a small time entrepreneur, but you know, I've got the freedom to do what I want and to do what I love doing, to help other people for something for the world needs. And so this philosophy or this way of life that your father had, this was instilled to you, because at the trailhead of this conversation, you said, you know, I was blessed because both my parents were entrepreneurs, and they were almost like I was coached into this through my childhood indirectly, but it fed you. And so at the end of your father's life, this even became, it sounds like these became even more striking headlines that helped you help point the way or the direction. Is that what I understand?
Yeah, it almost was a legacy that I wanted to live out, you know, to honor him, to cherish him, but not just for him, for me.
And he was kind of the bridge, the causeway that led you to strike out on your own. Not obviously he was a sort of a vehicle to help you to get there, but this was also for yourself to grow and to develop in the way you want.
Yeah, I just submitted a manuscript for my first book. And the book is called Where's Your Boat Headed? And in that, I called it Where's Your Boat Headed? Because when my brother and I were young, my father was very big into listening to growth mindset coaches, Bob Proctor.
Yeah, Bob Proctor, yeah.
All the
yeah,
time.
Yeah.
And he would put them on repeat for us to the point where I could recite, you know, entire paragraphs. And so, yes, I think that was a catalyst for a lot of, you know, my thinking and the way I go about my life today, for sure. I think number one, it's instilling confidence to be able to push through barriers, even when they're tall and high, And the idea of living with this mentality of no limits.
So then you were speaking to your sort of your communication company for 18 years. This is the same one that's running now, or?
So it was just acquired, I'm excited to say, in January of this year. And, but yes, 18 years in the making.
And how was that to start up a company and see it thrive over 18 years? I guess if we fast forward to 2020, all of a sudden the pandemic hits. How did that rattle your business? Did that rattle you, or did you manage to come through it all right?
Quite the contrary. I think that was probably my perfect storm. COVID in March 2020 was my perfect storm. Did not think that during the time, but I can look at back and kind of say that now. So in March 2020, we were moving homes. We had closed our home the week before the pandemic was declared. We were supposed to gut the entire home and renovate it. So it was down to studs. The next week after it was demolished, we had contractors saying we need to stop working because everyone was in, you know, everyone thought the world was ending at that point. I, at the same time, was dealing with this really, really terrible flu, which now when I look back, I'm very confident it was COVID. I could barely breathe walking up the stairs. It was really horrible. At the same time, within a 2-week period, I was getting calls from clients who were putting everything on pause. So I call it the 2 weeks of doom and gloom. Within 2 weeks, I lost 80% of my business.
And so if we pause there and kind of dive into your head in that March 2020, you know, you're physically, you're feeling weak and wasted because of if it was COVID or flu, whatever it was. And then 80% of your business is drained within that same 14 days. What's going through your head?
I was drowning. I was literally drowning. I was also facing the fact that I had 6 weeks to leave my current house to get into my new house. Mm-hmm. We didn't have washers. We didn't have kitchens. We didn't have heat. I have two kids that need shelter and nurture. At the time we were worried about moving in with family. We have family and they'd be happy to take us in, but we were worried about the fact that we were working with contractors or we were visiting with contractors at our new house. Mm-hmm. We could contract the disease and perhaps pass it on to, you know, elderly parents, my husband's parents or brothers and sisters or friends. So we really, I mean, it was the first time that I thought like we actually might be homeless. It wasn't even a time where you'd feel comfortable renting a hotel because everything was so unknown at that time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And scary. And the fear was just off the charts. And so what was going through my head? I was drowning. I was mentally and physically like going into a black hole. Mm-hmm. I don't think that I had ever felt such sense of desperation in my entire life. You know, dealing with the death of my parents was different. It, you know, it was a whole time, but it was something that I could grasp. But this was something that things were just world. My world was crumbling around me.
When it comes to this, Tanya, I mean, as you said, you felt you were drowning. Maybe you were actually thrown off the proverbial boat here and you didn't have a lifesaver. How, I mean, considering your journey so far, we've talked about the tenacity and the fortitude and the hunger and the drive and the motivation. How did that save you from going fully under?
I think there was a moment mm-hmm. I was prescribed puffers. Like I was on steroid puffers. It was really, really scary. I was prescribed puffers. I was in the middle of taking a puffer.
Can you describe what a puffer is for our international audience?
Yeah. Basically, it's to help you breathe. I couldn't actually lay down without feeling like I was drowning. Like my lungs were filling up with water. It was very scary. I was very sick.
Okay.
So I was in the middle of taking my medication. Mm-hmm. And my daughter walked into my bathroom. My young daughter walked in. And she had this look of panic in her eyes. And in a moment, I understood. School was indefinitely canceled. Mm-hmm. she heard her parent overheard her parents struggling with, you know, the new house and how we were, you know, going to move in and not move in, and, you know, issues with the contractors and everything. She saw that her mom couldn't even make a meal because I was too weak. She was, I guess, overhearing the news in the background and understanding that there's something really, really scary happening out there. And I knew all of this by just looking in her eyes, as a mom does. And I looked at her and I said, in my head, I have two choices. I can keep going down, or I can turn this around for her sake. If it's not for my sake, it's got to be for her sake. And at that moment, I kind of just knew what I had to do. I moved forward cautiously. I feel like I had a shield in one hand. My arms were crossed. I was ready for any barriers and new hurdles. I needed to see her for the light switch to go on to say, I can handle this. If I move into my house, you know, as long as we get the heat up and running, we can figure it out. We can eat on the floor. We can sleep on the floor, whatever it takes. I mean, we will have four walls. I knew that eventually, if I took care of my body, I would get better. And I knew that I built my business. I can rebuild it again. And that's how I moved forward.
And so your daughter was the crucible that sent you down or to start climbing that hill. As hard as it was, you started climbing the hill. You looked up, you saw the peak, but it sounded like it comes back down to that entrepreneurial mindset again, where you were focusing on the effort, on step one, step two, step three. You weren't worried about step 50. That will come when it comes. And in the background, your head, you're saying, I've built a business before. I can do this again. You're drawing from that experience, knowledge. Is that what I understand, Tonya? Just to make sure I'm on the same page.
Absolutely. My daughter was my cold shower to say, hey, you're going down the wrong path. You need to get it together and get back up and move forward. So it really allowed me, using that same analogy, to get back in control of my ship, become the captain again, and continue forward to my destination.
And I just want, you know, for the audience, for anyone who's listening to this, is just to understand that what you've just talked about, Tonya, is shifting the narrative. It was an external trigger that, in the shape of your daughter and her worries and her concerns, that made you become become cognizant of what you were telling yourself, right? And all of a sudden, you shifted your narrative, and that allowed you to start climbing out. And sometimes it sounds easy, but that's profoundly what it is when we shift the narrative, when we shift the meaning we ascribe to a situation, that can pull us from, you know, sliding to climbing, from the victim to the victor, right? To find that tenacity to kind of go through that storm, as you said, or climb the hill, or power your boat forward, or captain your boat, you said.
Yeah. And you know, Jason, I fell into it really easily. Even with the way I lead my life, looking back, I was really shocked how quickly I fell into it all and allowed myself to, like you had mentioned earlier, just get into the molasses where it was just so hard to take, you know, a step forward. But when it all hits you, you know, in a matter of 2 weeks, like a ton of bricks, it's really, we're human. It's easy to fall into that. So it takes a lot of effort to climb out of that and to be able to see any kind of silver lining when you're in the thick of it.
And so did you have a sparring partner? Was your husband, a friend, a sibling, a former colleague that you could kick around ideas? I mean, how did you process the weight of the emotions and the thinking?
I tend not to dwell on things. I did not have a sparring partner. It was a time when my husband was very busy at the new home, trying to get things moving. He was out for most of the day. My responsibility was the kids and really to pack up our current house so that we would be able to move 6 weeks. And so we almost didn't see each other during that period. My friends were very, very busy with their own kids, trying to work and family life during this period of time. So I actually felt very alone. which is a feeling that I'm not very used to. I'm an extrovert. I have a lot of friends. I'm always either on the phone with someone or talking to someone or seeing someone. It was a time, it was probably the most alone I've ever felt. Isolated, alone, which I'm sure a lot of people, you know, could share similar sentiments during that time. And so I had just myself. So it was like my devil and my angel, you know, on either shoulder. And playing with that and having a narrative and then saying, no, Tanya, change that narrative. And I would actually say it out loud so that I would believe what I was saying to myself, you know, oh my God, you're going to be homeless. You're not going to be homeless. You have a home. It may not be what, you know, you expect, but you have a home. Mm. You know, I've lost my entire business that I've built, you know, over the course of decades. And then again, talking out loud to myself saying, you've done it before, you can do it again. And you know what? You can do it better. You can fill gaps that were there. So it was really just me sparring with myself that helped me get out of it. And verbally talking out loud and maybe talking to myself.
Well, you know, what you stumbled on are very strong cognitive techniques, because the idea is to, when you're processing thoughts and emotions, it's to take them from this sort of abstract nature that they are and to translate them into concrete, tangible words, because then they become real. And one way is to sometimes expressive write it, or if you have a sparring partner. But in this case, what you did, and it's very important to understand this, is that you said those words out loud. When you hear it in your own voice, those abstract thoughts cannot morph and change into something more insidious or nefarious in your head. It doesn't have the chance. But once you nail it down, there it is. And if it doesn't sound right, like, oh, you're going to go down, you actually started talking to yourself almost in the third person. And when we shift, like you're giving yourself advice to a girlfriend or to your daughter or to a friend or what have you, what you do, you actually shift to a network in your brain that's more objective, right? You're not lost in the subjective perfect storm, as you called it, right? But you shift. So speaking out loud to yourself and giving yourself advice or pep talking yourself, these are very, very strong cognitive techniques, because you're not talking about just positive affirmations. You're drawing from experience. Remember, you did this. Remember, you went over this. You accomplished this. You climbed out of that pitfall. So I just wanted to nail that down. As simple as it sounds, it actually is quite profound, the skills that you use to pull yourself out. When the pandemic landed in Toronto of March 2020, Tanya described it as the perfect storm. COVID had hammered her health, leaving her wheezing for air. It also hit her business hard, where 80% of her clientele were vaporized. It left her mentally and physically spiraling into a black hole. And then one day came a turning point. She looked into her daughter's eyes. You can see the fear and the worry and the concern. And she said to herself, if I'm not going to turn things around for my sake, it's going to be for her sake. And with that initial thought, it led to opening the door to more constructive, confident thinking. And one of those thoughts is, she said to herself, no, I built a business before, I can do it again, and I can do it even better. I also want to emphasize an important point that Tanya brought up. You know, she grew up with two parents that supported her in an environment that encouraged tenacity and the entrepreneurial spirit to move through adversity, to be able to pivot and adapt. But it just shows you that sometimes life, as Tanya called it, the perfect storm, can throw so much at us that we can feel overburdened and overwhelmed, like we are drowning. And even with all our skills and experience and knowledge, we can sometimes get hit to the ground. But what is key here is the ability to process our thoughts and emotions. And as Tanya told us in part two, is that she spoke her thoughts out loud. She addressed her emotions out loud. And what that did, it allowed her to gain a new perspective. Even though she couldn't change the circumstances, she was able to shift her perspective. She actually said, you know what, Tanya? You have built a business. You will build it again. You have the experience and the knowledge. You can do this. And thus, she took the objective perspective. And another key point here is that she dealt with the facts. She dealt with experience and not wishful thinking, not positive affirmations. She knew it was going to be a slog and a hard work, but she was dedicated to do that, to pivot, to adapt, and to adopt a positive mindset. So if we fast forward now, you've just sold your company, and obviously that's great. So congrats on that. You started something called Shepreneur. I was wondering if you could elaborate on what that is.
So many people think about entrepreneurism, and it's a very lucrative life. It seems like a very lucrative life. People are attracted to the idea of entrepreneurship because of the stereotype, you know, that they feel like they can control their own life and create something amazing and have all this success that comes with that. But what I realized is that there's so many people who want to become entrepreneurs, but they don't necessarily have the nurturing environment that is needed to move forward with that type of career. And it really was a time post-COVID that I felt like, you know, being a woman, understanding the demands on a female where, you know, you're perhaps a primary caregiver. You're also, I always like to say, you're the CEO at home and you're the CEO at work. And juggling that time was something that most women, in my generation anyway, have never dealt with before. And so out of that, just looking at some studies, there were many female entrepreneurs born out of that time. And I thought, what about those who perhaps are on the fence or come from situations that are less favorable, but have the drive, have the desire, but need the foundation? And so really the purpose of Shepreneur was to create an environment that fosters the nurture and the knowledge to be able to move into a career of entrepreneurship. So it initially started as a give back initiative. We focused on working with vulnerable women, women in terrible life situations, almost the worst that you can think of, women who are coming away from human trafficking, women who are in poverty, and they're looking to create a life of self-sustainability, self-reliancy, and really helping them to achieve that. So we partnered with Toronto Metropolitan University, specifically their entrepreneurship program, to create a curriculum, which is comes in the form of, I call it a 10-week boot camp. And we also partnered with the Orphan Starfish Foundation, which is an organization out of Manhattan, New York, who works with a lot of these groups. So we put the curriculum together with the groups and created this program called Shepreneur. We had launched our pilot project about a year ago, and we've had 27 women graduate the program. We were able to fund them on their startup ventures, and they all walked out with solid business plans, newly found motivation, and a new outlook on life.
You know, that's really great because, as you said, it's sometimes we need to create an ecosystem in which we can incubate ideas, which we can incubate self-confidence and self-efficacy and the self-awareness and everything that else that's the fundamentals that are needed to find that hunger and that tenacity and the drive that you had naturally growing up in that kind of environment. But it sounds like you've taken that ecosystem that you grew up and you kind of handcrafted it with the help of these other organizations, and you have these 27 women that graduated. Was this all in Toronto, or was this spread across New York and Toronto, or like where was this located, these graduates per se?
It was global.
Global. Okay.
And starting Shepreneur, I really feel like our world has changed. It's so global. There really isn't any barriers or boundaries anymore when it comes to international business. Mm-hmm. So I really wanted to make this a global effort. I do feel, you know, in North America, we just generally are more privileged than other societies. And I felt like if we were going to do this, I wanted to make this a global effort. We worked in South Africa. We worked in Mexico City. We worked in Dominican Republic. We also worked in Toronto. And, you know, we have other boot camps that are set up for other areas in the world. I think the biggest benefit on a global level for Shepreneur is really creating these entrepreneurs, launching them out into their communities. We're actually creating social economic changes in these communities. As these businesses grow, they're providing solutions to communities. They're also providing potential work for communities, and they have the potential to really change communities and have these communities grow and thrive because of these entrepreneurs.
What are some of the values that you instill or help to instill in these women to find that confidence?
I mean, the bootcamp is, I would say, split. Half of it is mindset and half of it is hard skill. When we look at the mindset portion, I've always believed there's three areas that help define success. One is knowing your destination. I always refer to that as being number one. Mm-hmm. Clarity on your purpose. Where are you headed? Why are you doing what you're doing? And how does that play into the rest of your life? Visualizing it, manifesting it, feel as though you're already there. Practice it. The second thing that we instill is mindset, knowing when to let go of things, keeping a positive mindset when things are at their absolute low, and focusing on what matters most and keeping that as your guiding light. Mm-hmm. And finally, it's really just about hard work. I always like to think that there's the destination and there's the hard work. They play into each other constantly. The hard work will help you get to the destination, and the destination helps motivate your hard work. Mindset, to me, is the environment that both destination and hard work bathe in every day. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we really try to focus on working with these women to change those three things, to help define those things for them so that they're able to reach success.
So I'd like to just dive into that, because what you pretty much told me is a recipe of resilience, of this robust mindset. I mean, in the mindset part of the 10-week bootcamp, is it that are there sort of discussion groups where they draw from their history and they share things, how they've come through adversity, come through challenge, what they learned about themselves? I mean, I can see it's sort of some sort of course matter, but is there a lot of discussions going on to try to absorb and to become part of their entrepreneurial DNA, their thinking?
That's interesting. Yes, there is. A lot of what these women have gone through have made them who they are.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
A really interesting picture of it looks like a woman in this beautiful garden, but when you kind of zoom out, she's actually in a glass that has a ceiling. If you can imagine that photo. Mm-hmm. And we ask the students, the women, what they see. And just listening to them is so moving on so many different levels. And the way they see it versus the way I would see it, the way some of my friends would see it, the way my own daughters would see it. Mm. Everyone has such a different way of looking at it. But knowing where they came from and knowing where they're headed makes it so significant when they say things like, I see a better future for this girl, but right now she's enclosed, you know, in a glass case. But her mindset will allow her to eventually lift the lid on that glass case. You know, these are just some of the things that they say. Again, knowing their background makes it so powerful to hear on the other end.
You know, because I think it's so important, because what you're asking them is to tell me a story of what you see. And that talks about the narrative. You know, back in the day, before I started working with just corporate clients, I worked with trauma. And those women that I worked with, for example, those who were able to make sense of the situation, they accept what has happened to them. They don't accept that it's my fault. So they move from victim to victor. But they accept that something has happened to them, but they don't let that define who they are. It's part of a pearl or string of pearls that become their experience, their life story. And it's what I hear is, I find it so motivating and heartwarming. This, just this metaphor of, you know, or this picture they have of this woman in a sort of a glass case. What does it mean for them? But the way, it sounds like you and your colleagues ask questions. It's like, how do you see the destination? What is the purpose? Do you see this woman growing beyond the constraints of her life as it is now, right? Even though some of those constraints obviously are not her fault, but those constraints are there. That's the reality. But what I hear you is getting them to speak from their experience, their knowledge of their background and how that stretches into the future, into some sort of constructive and positive future, using this as a sort of a symbolism or a bridge. I think that's so motivating, because at the end of the day, it comes back to you. As you said, you were in despair during COVID, but seeing your daughter, that almost, maybe I'm stretching it a little, but that in itself became a form of symbol or an icon that allowed you to see a more positive future, right? I mean, it wasn't wishful thinking. No, you understand that there was the grind and the hustle to get there. Am I sort of in the same ballpark here?
Yeah, absolutely. The way that we purposely put up this photo up on a slide, and we don't say very much. We just say, look at this photo and tell me what you see. And with very little coaching, and almost always, these women are able to articulate that they are in this situation, but they see this bright path ahead. If I can summarize all of their experiences into sort of one statement. And yes, like sometimes that's what it takes. I think it's not about, you know, forgetting your past, because that's not going to happen. It's about growing around your past and figuring out how you can grow from that to create more and better.
And some of the information I was reading about you in the background research I was doing before this interview, Tanya, you talked about sort of designing your own life. Is this to some extent sort of the mindset you were talking about that you teach to these women in Shepreneur?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's the idea of designing your own life and figuring out what success means to you. To me, the idea of success changes throughout your life. You know, what you might define as success when you're 15 is going to be very different than when you're 25 and 45 and 65. So being able to define what success means to you and then designing your life to meet that success is extremely important. And when I talk about success, I'm not talking about fancy cars and fancy purses and houses on the water. When I look at what success is, it's about achieving balance, the ability to do exactly what you want, be who you want, when you want, and how you want. That's what success means to me. And it's a totally different mindset when you're able to say, I will live life on my terms. Your dates look different, your months look different, your years look different. And I try to instill this in my daughters and in the people that I mentee, you know, say it out loud. It sounds funny when you say it for the first time, when you say, I will live life on my terms. It sounds so uncomfortable to say when you first say it, but when you rehearse it enough, it actually somehow gets into your brain and I don't know, the laws of attractions come to play in, and eventually your life moves in that direction.
Well, when you repeatedly say something to yourself, that becomes your default narrative. And if it's something encouraging and motivating and that feeds you and that instills you with confidence, over time, you know, a mental habit is no different from a physical habit. It uses the same networks, the same infrastructure in your brain to do this. And, you know, there's something called the reticular activating system. There's this little bit of the brain, just at the brainstem. And basically what it is, you know, we're getting bombarded by 80 billion bytes of information, but it works on a filter. It filters in about 80 bytes of that billions of information. But what does it do? Well, it filters based on what is important to you, what you value. So what I hear you saying is that if I'm constantly telling myself to build myself up constructively, not positive affirmation, but true nuts and bolts narrative to do this, what happens is all of a sudden your brain starts picking things out in your environment, right? And that's just how the brain works. And what you're saying has tremendous and profound effects on the neuroscience of how we can build ourselves up, or the neuroscience of this entrepreneurial mindset you're speaking about. So there's a lot of things that you do that I can see in the parallel of what I know from my own discipline. And you know, we come from two different disciplines, but there's a lot of overlap there, Tanya. I am very respectful of your time, Tanya. You've already given me generous more than an hour. I was wondering, is there anything I haven't asked you that you would like to share, a piece of advice to tag on to what you've already said?
I think when we're looking at mindset, it's about really focusing on the idea of, instead of focusing on managing your circumstances, focus on creating your circumstances.
Well, Tanya, thank you very much. I think that's a very great place to end the conversation. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you sharing your experiences and knowledge and, you know, opening up and being as vulnerable as you were, because for me, that's another tenet of resilience. So thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure. Amazing. Thank you.
Well, folks, that was the brilliant and inspiring Tanya Dodaro. Thank you very much, Tanya, for sharing your story with us. You know, even with someone who is strong as you are, it just shows that life can sometimes hit us with multiple punches, and that can leave us staggered. But with the right mindset, with the right focus, how we invest our attention, it shows time and time again how we can get back up on our feet and move forward. And Tanya, you are a living example of that. So again, Tanya, thank you very much for your time. If any of you are interested in reaching out to Tanya, I will leave all her contact information in the show notes. And again, another brilliant conversation. Well, folks, that brings us to the tail end of another episode. And I thank you for showing up every week. If you're interested in subscribing to the newsletter, you can also find that link in the show notes. But until next week, keep well, keep strong, and we'll speak soon.